based on the information we collected, as well as the interview, we have what we believe is confirmation that we have the right suspect.
An arrest in the murder of a young girl from Cake. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, February 18th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Governor Parnell says an important deadline for a gas line has been met.
They said that they would move forward on a concept of a 42-inch line, 5 offtakes for Alaskans, gas treatment plant on the North Slope.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2013 PFD and consider sharing a portion of your dividend through Pick, Click, Give or contributing to a college savings plan. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
Former State Senator Albert Kukesh was medevaced to Anchorage this morning after suffering a heart attack. His oldest daughter, Elaine, says the 64-year-old Kukesh was in Juneau preparing for a trip out of state when he called his wife saying he was having chest pains and was going to the hospital. He was stabilized and medevaced to Providence Hospital in Anchorage. His wife was also in Juneau and was able to fly with him.
And they're currently now at Providence. They're going to go into the catheter to see where the blockage is.
The oldest daughter of Mr. Kukesh's 5 children, Elaine, says she will travel to Anchorage this evening to be with her dad.
My sister and I are heading up tonight, and then my other sister will head up as soon as she can. Just keep us all in your thoughts and prayers. He's a tough guy. He never sits, even when he's sick.
A Democrat from Angoon, Kukesh served 16 years in total, 8 as a representative and 8 more as a senator. He was defeated by Sitka Republican Bert Stedman after parts of their southeast district were combined during redistricting. Kukesh is the current chairman of Sea Alaska's board of directors, as well as a co-chair of the Alaska Federation of Natives board. Numerous interviews and physical evidence led state troopers to arrest a 14-year-old boy from the community of Cake, who they believe is responsible for the death of 13-year-old Mackenzie Howard. That's according to the deputy commander of the Major Crimes Section for the Alaska Bureau of Investigation. Matt Lichtenstein spoke with him Saturday night and has the story.
Lieutenant Rex Leith is the Alaska Bureau of Investigation supervisor on the case. He says they arrested the teenage suspect around 11 Saturday morning after 10 days of collecting evidence and interviews.
We conducted quite a few interviews in the community and also at the scene of the crime found some key pieces of evidence that had different kinds of biological evidence on them. And also when we communicated with the community and identified who we thought could be one of our suspects, we went and contacted that suspect and did end up serving some search warrants at the suspect's residence and acquired more pieces of evidence.
Investigators provided that evidence to the state crime laboratory. Leith says the lab's work and additional information from interviews ultimately led troopers to take the boy into custody. The arrest comes 10 days after a community member found 13-year-old Mackenzie Howard's body in an entryway to Cake Memorial Presbyterian Church late at night on February 5th. Leith says the suspect was compliant and troopers were able to interview him. Leith would not say whether the boy admitted to the crime, but the Bureau is confident he acted alone.
I can tell you that based on the information we collected, as well as the interview, we have what we believe is confirmation that we have the right suspect.
You don't believe anyone else was involved?
No, we do not.
Authorities have not made public the actual cause of Mackenzie Howard's death, but they have treated the case as a homicide from the beginning. The state medical examiner later confirmed it was homicide after an autopsy. State troopers from Juneau and Ketchikan, as well as investigators and crime scene technicians from Anchorage and other communities, went to Cake to work on the case. Because the suspect is a minor, Leith said he could not release his name or the specific charges that are pending against him.
All I can really say is that we have a homicide. And we have one person we believe is responsible for that in our custody now.
Leith says it will be up to the Division of Juvenile Justice to decide whether the charges against the suspect are made public. The boy was being transported to a juvenile justice holding facility and was expected to go before a judge in Ketchikan over the weekend. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
An arrest was made on Friday for a double murder that took place at the communications station on Coast Guard Base Kodiak last spring. Suspect James Michael Jim Wells is expected to appear in court this week. From Kodiak, KMXT's Brianna Gibbs has the story.
On the morning of April 12th of last year, U.S. Coast Guard's electrician's mate First Class James Hopkins and retired Chief Bosun's mate Richard Belisle were found by co-workers shot to death in one of the buildings at the Coast Guard communications station. Belisle was working for the Coast Guard as a civilian contractor at the time, as was the accused Jim Wells. FBI spokesman Eric Gonzalez said the 61-year-old Wells was taken into custody on Friday after a sealed federal arrest warrant was issued. Gonzalez said the complaint, or affidavit, is sealed and will remain so until Wells appears in court, which is expected sometime this week in Anchorage. This means the underlying details and facts leading up to the arrest remain confidential. Gonzalez did not say what the motive in the killings might have been. On Saturday, Wells' wife, Nancy, told the Associated Press that she had full faith in her husband's innocence and none in the quality of the investigation. She declined any further comment. The Kodiak Daily Mirror reported that Richard Belisle's daughter, Amy Belisle, and his wife, Nicola Belisle, were in Anchorage when they learned of the arrest. Amy Belisle told the Mirror she and her mother were overjoyed that finally something had happened. She said the arrest offers a little bit more closure, but also expressed sadness for Wells' family. She said she feels sorry that someone else's family is now going to be torn apart. Wells' arrest on Friday came after 10 months of investigation, led by the FBI and the Coast Guard Investigative Service, along with Alaska State Troopers. In Kodiak, I'm Brianna Gibbs.
The Alaska Supreme Court is ordering that the state's redistricting plan be redrawn for the 2014 elections. In an opinion released Friday, the High Court denied the State Redistricting Board's petition for rehearing on a December Supreme Court decision and has ordered the board to redraw the state voting map to be in line with the state constitution. In a meeting last week, the board outlined a draft timeline for completion of the work in anticipation of the court's decision. Board Attorney Mike White outlined some of the board's options.
Another option that potentially the board has, it would be to seek a writ of certiorari or petition the United States Supreme Court to review the Alaska Supreme Court decision. Perfectly appropriate for the U.S. Supreme Court to review the decision of a last court of resort in a state, in this instance the Alaska Supreme Court, where there's a federal question involved. The issue here is there a federal question?
The board has not yet decided whether it might ask the nation's highest court to review the case. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Red Lantern musher in the Yukon Quest doesn't mind coming in alone.
I prefer to be by myself. I train by myself. I don't really have anybody else running with me and when I'm out, you know, training in the Northwest Territories.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority was created by the Alaska State Legislature to develop, stimulate, and advance the economic welfare of the state and further the development of public transportation systems. The authority has completed required environmental work to date, and the Federal Highway Administration has given its approval needed to move forward. There's more information at KinnickArmBridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
Governor Sean Parnell gave an update in Fairbanks on Friday on what he called a significant milestone in plans for building a gas pipeline in Alaska. In his State of the State address a few weeks ago, the governor had given the companies BP, ConocoPhillips, Exxon, and TransCanada a deadline of February 15th. To come forward with details of their proposed project. A letter from the companies, delivered Friday, stated they had made a project concept selection. The governor called that an important phase in building a line.
They said that they would move forward on a concept of a 42-inch line, 5 offtakes for Alaskans, a gas treatment plant on the North Slope, and the project details are actually in their attachment to that letter. The significance of it is it's the first time in Alaska's history that companies that can build and operate a pipeline are together on a project concept selection like this.
Parnell says the line would run 800 miles, mostly underground. Although the treatment plant is proposed for the North Slope, there is not yet a decision about where on the coast the line would end. The cost is estimated to be between $45 and $65 billion. The governor said he wants more investment from the companies before a discussion about additional investment or tax guarantees from the state.
The state has already committed up to $500 million to this gas line project. When I see the companies step forward with hundreds of millions of dollars, which will be the next phase, the pre-FEED phase, that would be the appropriate time to talk about next steps when it comes to fiscals.
Larry Pursley is the federal coordinator for permitting for the gas line project. He says there is good news in Friday's announcement, but for Alaskans, expectations over the past 10 years have outpaced reality. Pursley says the project is not moving as fast as Alaskans had hoped or been led to believe by past politicians who had promised that it would be easy and fast.
When you're trying to put together the largest and most expensive natural gas project in the world, there's a tremendous amount of risk in construction, cost overruns, market appetite for it. So it is a exceedingly laborious, painful, slow process that we're going through.
The letter the governor received from the companies doesn't line out a site for the liquefaction plant. Last October, the company said they were considering 22 possible locations in Prince William Sound, Cook Inlet, and elsewhere in South Central. The liquefaction plant's capacity will be 15 to 18 million metric tons per year, averaging about 2 to 2.4 billion cubic feet of gas per day. The update did not have any new information about engineering, design, or environmental studies. The final musher crossed the Yukon Quest finish line Friday evening, bringing to a close the 30th running of the annual race between Whitehorse in the Yukon and Fairbanks. A handful of awards were handed out to participants at the awards banquet on Saturday night. KUAC's Emily Schwing reports.
Bells jingled as rookie Diane Bergen pulled her team across this year's Yukon Quest finish line.
There are really bear bells and we always put bear bells just to keep like the buffalo, let the buffalo know that we're coming, and the moose and wolves and stuff. And the one time I didn't have the bear bells on this year, we got chased by wolves, so I put the bear bells back on.
Bergen from Yellowknife in Canada's Northwest Territories is the 20th and final musher to arrive in Fairbanks. She traveled nearly the entire quest trail from Whitehorse by herself.
I prefer to be by myself. I train by myself. I don't really have anybody else running with me, and when I'm out, you know, training in the Northwest Territories, so it's just kind of normal for me. I like it. Yeah, I can run at my own pace, knock my dogs at my own pace, and stop when I think they're tired. And
Bergen's dogs are just as shy as she is. Roughly 200 meters from the finish line, her whole team stopped. Bergen says the crowd gathered to welcome them in, and the bridges overhead made the dogs nervous. So she switched up her leaders and walked the skittish team across the line. She says it's unlikely she'll return for another quest.
Yeah, I gotta spend the next 5 years paying for everything. Yeah.
Bergen accepted a red lantern for her finale finish during a banquet Saturday night. She and a handful of other rookies were recognized by 2013 Rookie of the Year Scott Smith.
To be a rookie in this race is unlike any other race, that's for sure. And I feel more like a representative to you guys this year than the top rookie this year. So to Marcus Ingebertson, Susie Rogan, Danae Tremblay, Cody Strath, Darren Lee, Rob Cook, Matt Failer, and Diane Bergen, great job and congratulations.
Rookie Darren Lee took home the Challenge of the North Award this year. Race officials agreed unanimously Lee most exemplified the spirit of the race. This was Lee's third attempt to complete the Yukon Quest.
I never stopped running dogs ever since I last came here, and it was always to come back and to finish this. So I really appreciate the officials recognizing me and everybody. Thank you.
Lee is among a handful of mushers who say they won't return for another quest, but there is one musher who says he'll never leave. Dave Dalton of Healy tied 1995 champion Frank Turner for the most Yukon Quest finishes this year. Both men have run 18 races. Dalton says he doesn't have a reason to quit.
It's just a way of life for me. It's just the people and the racing, and you know, it's an adventure every year. Different things happen, and it's a challenge every year, and it challenges me and my dogs and my body. And
Dalton's highest finish is third place in 2004 and 2008. He says he's always aiming for a win.
Oh yeah, next year we got five new finishers, so we should have a good selection next year. So we're still rebuilding year after year. So one of these days, it's just going to click.
There were a handful of other awards given out during the banquet. Eureka musher Brent Sass received this year's Sportsmanship Award. White Horse musher Normand Cazavant was awarded the Veterinarian's Choice Award for exemplary dog care. Champion Alan Moore's lead dog Quito received a bowl full of steak and a golden harness. The 6-year-old husky has finished 3 quests and 4 Iditarods. Alan Moore says he'll likely return next year. With years of racing ahead of her, Quito may well be one of the lead dogs to leave next year's Yukon Quest start line on February 1st, 2014. I'm Emily Schwing in Fairbanks.
There are 37 tribal colleges in the United States, and Barrow, Alaska is home to one of them. Illisogvic College was founded in the 1980s, but didn't become an independent, accredited tribal school until 2006. Now it offers a blend of traditional college classes, technical trade training, and Inupiaq culture that gives students from around the North Slope the chance to get ahead without leaving their identities behind. APRN's Ann Hillman visited the school as part of our Rural-Urban series.
This is the classroom for our office administration instructor for our office administration program.
Elizabeth College's projects assistant, Kayla Jeffries, leads me on a tour of the dozen or so classrooms and offices that fill an updated Quonset hut left by the Navy in the 1960s.
That's the word, human resources, like all that kind of stuff, office-centered tasks.
It's a typical classroom in a not-so-typical setting. Back outside, we hustle in the cold past the campus's sole outdoor decoration, a giant bowhead whale skull.
Tell me, why is there a whale skull here?
We're a tribal college, and we like to celebrate Inupiaq culture. It's all about Inupiaq people, by Inupiaq people, for Inupiaq people. So it's an important symbol of the culture. Oh, and it's chilly.
Pearl Brower, the college's president, says that focus is what shapes the college.
Being a part of the North Slope has always put a focus on our culture, our language, our values, our traditions. And being a tribal college just allows us to emphasize that even more. As a tribal college, the perpetuation of your culture is a number one priority.
To that end, the course catalog offers classes like Inuit storytelling, baleen carving, and conversational Inupiaq. Inupiaq culture and language are so ingrained at the school that the weekly Friday staff meeting includes an hour of learning Inupiaq through a new Rosetta Stone program. But Illisavik is about more than just perpetuating local culture. Brower says it's about giving residents the educational opportunities they need to get and keep jobs on the North Slope.
Being responsive is a number one priority. If someone comes to us and says we need a training to on this so that we can hire residents so they can be employed, we want to be able to act right away and say, okay, we can have that for you in a week, in 2 weeks, in a month.
To accomplish that, they've offered everything from asbestos abatement and hazmat training to a degree for being a dental hygienist. Brower says it's a gateway to higher education as well.
In rural Alaska, it's hard for people to leave. It's hard for people to leave and go to some of the urban areas. And so we're really here as number one, a place for them to get education, and number two, some for as a stepping stone so that they can get their AA degree here and then transfer on to four-year institutions.
For some of the students, it's also a chance to pursue their dreams while staying close to home and close to their own identities.
Risking it, huh?
A group of students finally starts relaxing at about 11 p.m., settling into the lounge for a game of cribbage. I ask Travis Hupikson, Joseph Okaguk, and Alfred Stalker about why they chose Illisavik. Two of them are fulfilling basic requirements before getting a 4-year degree in the city, then coming back to the North Slope. Upikson wants to be an electrician and answers first.
It means being able to have native foods anytime I want to. They got a freezer full of some caribou, some fish, whale meat, and muktuk.
But going to a tribal college also means being able to maintain their identities.
But do you lose your identity if you go somewhere else?
Oh, yeah. You do. You change.
Yeah.
Like, if I move down to Lower 48,
you won't be able to.
You won't be able to hunt. Your language will die down. So your culture, then you lose yourself. You'll become a whole different person.
By staying on the North Slope, they can still join their friends' whaling crews and go out hunting. For April Phillip, going to Ilisavik is a way to reconnect with her family.
I went to a boarding school in Sitka at Mount Edgecombe High School, so I was away from home for 4 years, and I felt like I missed out a lot on my little brother and sisters growing up.
By attending Ilisavik, the students can maintain their connections to family and to culture while getting skills for the future. For APRN, I'm Ann Hillman.
For the next several weeks, APRN will be airing a series that looks at how Alaskans describe what makes their way of life unique. Whether you live in a village or a city, everyone has a culture, and we're going to bring you stories of how both urban and rural Alaskans define and live theirs. The series is funded by a grant from the Alaska Humanities Forum.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. An artist is a person who expresses themselves creatively through words, images, sounds, materials, or original performance. If you are an artist, you might be eligible for funding to support your creative work. March 1st is the deadline to apply for an individual artist award. Visit Rasmussen Foundation on Facebook or on the web at rasmussen.org for more information. This message sponsored by Rasmussen Foundation.
A Homer charter boat captain who pleaded guilty to distributing drugs to minors and possession of child pornography has been sentenced to 10 years in prison. As KBBI's Aaron Selvig reports, 34-year-old Randall Hines will also have to pay $160,000 in restitution.
The complaint against Randall Hines came from the U.S. Attorney's Office and was originally filed August 17, 2011. In the complaint, FBI agent Jolene Godin details an investigation of Hines that found he had given drugs to several teenage girls in the Homer area and had sexual relations with some of them. The complaint says that in 2009, Hines gave methamphetamine to a 15-year-old girl and later convinced her to move in with him. When Hines began using the girl to sell methamphetamine in Homer, her mother filed a restraining order against him. The complaint says that Hines told the girl to write a letter to the state of Alaska court handling the restraining order, stating that she did not live with him and did not do drugs with him. The girl wrote the letter, but later recanted her story. Hines was arrested and charged on August 11, 2011. He signed a plea agreement in February of 2012, admitting to supplying methamphetamine and oxycodone to several teenage girls and to having sexual relations with some of them. He also admitted to obstructing the investigation into his activities after he learned of it. In exchange for the plea deal, federal prosecutors dropped some of the charges against Hines, pressing forward with only two of them, distribution of drugs to underage individuals and possession of child pornography. Both are felonies. Hines was sentenced to 10 years in prison and 10 years of supervised release. He was ordered to pay $160,000 to a victim's restitution fund and will have to register as a sex offender upon his release. The prosecutors in the case were Kimberly Sayers Fay of the U.S. Attorney's Office in Anchorage and Alexandra Gelber of the U.S. Department of Justice Child Exploitation and Obscenity Section in Washington, D.C. Hines' sentence was imposed by U.S. District Court Judge Timothy Burgess, who recommended Hines serve his sentence at a federal facility in Sheridan, Oregon. In Homer, I'm Aaron Selvig.
Alaskans marked Elizabeth Paranovich Day on Saturday in honor of the Tlingit woman whose testimony to the territorial legislature helped pass an anti-discrimination act in 1945. A small crowd gathered at the Alaska State Museum in Juneau to hear a talk from Barbara Cadiente Nelson, a board member of Sea Alaska Native Corporation and the Douglas Indian Association, as well as a member of the Alaska Native Sisterhood.
Mrs. Paratrovich's testimony exemplifies a Tlingit value that our words have spirit and life. They tear down or they build up. Choose them wisely.
Paratrovich and her husband Roy were leaders of the Alaska Native Sisterhood and Brotherhood in the early 1940s, a time when Native people faced discrimination in housing and from many businesses in Juneau and elsewhere in the state. Since ANB and ANS were the leading civil rights organizations of the day, the couple petitioned Territorial Governor Ernest Gruening to introduce the Anti-Discrimination Act. Elizabeth Paratrovich was the last to testify before the Territorial Senate voted on the bill in 1945. In 1988, the Alaska legislature made February 16th Elizabeth Paratrovich Day to mark the anniversary of the date Gruening signed the act into law. Cadiente Nelson acknowledged the progress in the nearly 70 years since the act passed, but said there remains work to do to eliminate racism against Native people.
When I was a teacher at the Juneau Douglas High School during a painful time, the acronym CAN was written on my whiteboard and on my desk boards, is kill all Natives. That's just one glimpse as to the presence of this evil that sometimes knocks on our door.
After Cadiente Nelson's speech, the State Museum held a special screening of the documentary For the Rights of All, Ending Jim Crow in Alaska. The museum currently has an exhibit honoring Paratrovich titled Alaska Native Woman Activist. It's on display through March 16th. The Juneau Douglas City Museum also has a special exhibit this month honoring Paratrovich. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Brianna Gibbs in Kodiak, Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg, Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Emily Schwing in Fairbanks, Ann Hillman in Barrow, Aaron Selbig in Homer, and Casey Kelly in Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Pat Yak is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Meridian Management, specializing in coordination and management of all phases of construction projects from vision to completion, working to ensure that your project is on time and on budget. More at meridianak.com. Crowley, a neighbor for nearly 60 years. Whether barbecuing for a community picnic or delivering fuel to remote locations, Crowley lives and works in Alaska and is proud to support public radio. cpdalaska.com.
And by
First National Bank Alaska, helping Alaska's dreams grow since 1922. On the web at fnbalaska.com, an equal housing lender, member FDIC. Regardless of where you live, you've got a better shot at earning the Alaska Performance Scholarship by enrolling in the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program. ANSEP challenges students with classes that are necessary to earn the scholarship. ANSEP.net. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.